chromosomes. Little strands of nucleic acids and proteins are the fundamental genetic instructions that tell us who we are at birth. Most people are born with 46 chromosomes, but each year in the United States, about 6,000 people are born with an extra chromosome, making them a person with Down syndrome. If you've ever encountered someone with Down syndrome, you know that they are some of the kindest, most joyful people you will ever meet. They truly have something extra. My name is Lisa Nichols, and I have spent the last 24 years as both the CEO of Technology Partners and as the mother to Allie. Allie has something extra in every sense of the word. I have been blessed to be by her side as she impacts everyone she meets. Through these two important roles as CEO and mother to Allie, I have witnessed countless life lessons that have fundamentally changed the way I look at the world. While you may not have an extra chromosome, every leader has something extra that defines who you are. Join me as I explore the something extra in leaders from all walks of life and discover how that difference in each of them has made a difference in their companies, their families, their communities, and in themselves. I'm thrilled to have Jack Scatizzi on the show today. Jack is currently the executive director of Missouri Technology Corporation, a public-private partnership created by the Missouri General Assembly to promote entrepreneurship and foster the growth of new and emerging high-tech companies within the state. If you like this episode today, please go to Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen and leave us a 5-star rating. So, Jack, welcome to the Something Extra podcast. I am so delighted that you've made the time to be on the show today. I truly have been really looking forward to this, and I cannot wait to dig into your journey. But I'm also really excited about you telling our listeners all the good stuff that's happening in Missouri right now. And we've got a lot to talk about. So thank you so much for being willing to be on the show.
Oh, my pleasure.
So Jack and I know each other from the Missouri Technology Corporation Board, and we'll get into that. But before we do, I know you're a St. Louis native. Tell me a little bit about growing up.
So born and raised, grew up in Ellisville, was in the Rockwood School District. And then I went to Mizzou. Undergrad in biochemistry, and then I came back to St. Louis, got a PhD from St. Louis University, and then I left to spend about a decade in Southern California. And I returned probably 3.5 years ago, and I've been enjoying the life I've created ever since returning to St. Louis.
So you go off to Mizzou, you get a bachelor's in biochemistry, then you go and get a PhD in molecular biology and immunology from SLU. Tell me, Jack, why did you pick those things to go into? What influenced you? What inspired you when you were younger to do those things?
Basically, I try not to overthink things too much in my life. So at the core, I was good at math and science. My grandfather and my uncles were engineers. So going into college, I was considering engineering and I was considering medical school. I chose medical school. So that's how I ended up in the biochemistry program at Mizzou. That was one of the best feeder programs to prepare you for medical school. Got about halfway through my career at Mizzou, started taking MCATs and started really looking at what it would take to get into medical school and what medical school would be like. And I realized I wasn't really interested in that. I started working in some of the academic labs at Mizzou, and I got some internships at Pfizer when it was headquartered in St. Louis. And I realized I was really good at academic research. Following graduation from college, I was offered a full-time position at Pfizer. This pharmacy at the time, Pfizer bought them while I was there. There was a hiring freeze, and the hiring freeze kept going on and on and on. And I finally decided that instead of waiting out the hiring freeze at Pfizer, I would just go and get a PhD. So I applied and was accepted to St. Louis University, got my PhD there. So when you talk about how did I pick molecular microbiology and immunology, I did a tour of probably 5 or 6 of what I thought were their most promising labs and researchers, and I found one I really connected with, and he happened to be in immunology, and so I ended up in immunology.
So tell me, what is molecular microbiology and immunology? I mean, I know about immune systems and things like that, but tell us, what does a day in the life look like for somebody like that?
So, you know, at a high level, you know, my PhD is essentially in immunology, which covers things like virology. So, you know, I have a deep understanding of basics of COVID. but it also studies how the immune system reacts. And more recently, a lot of oncology is kind of falling under immunology as well. So those are kind of the three buckets that encompass immunology. As a researcher, I worked on a couple different projects. When I was at St. Louis University, we were kind of understanding the role of the different cells in inflammation, specifically in an arthritis model. When I went to UCSD, again, I was working on kind of understanding inflammation in different models. And when I ended up at the Scripps Research Institute, I got into genetics, and we were actually looking for susceptibility genes for lupus. So most people are familiar of like BRCA1 and BRCA2 as the susceptibility genes for breast cancer. So we were trying to identify the analogous genes for lupus to where if we identified them and someone got tested, they could just understand if they were more susceptible to lupus or not. And the interesting thing about lupus is it's very hard to diagnose. So the identification of susceptibility genes was going to be a key tool in the physician's toolbox to be able to identify patients with lupus. So day in the life was running a lot of different experiments. You were doing, especially with animal models, you would sometimes have to set up, especially when we were doing lupus, like year-long studies. And so you were at any point in time running multiple different studies at parallel, some that, were only going to take a week or two, some that were going to take 6 months, and some that were going to take 12 to 18 months. So being able to kind of balance short-term, middle-term, and long-term ended up being a skill set that I learned in the lab that translated very well to operations outside of the lab.
Such important work, Jack, and just everything that you're talking about. I mean, the whole idea is to identify these things that, as you said, are tools in the physician's tool belt to identify these things quicker, and then hopefully, come up with some protocols to treat people, right? So such important work. Yep. I want to talk about Tech Coast Angels because you got on the other side. And I think you were there for about 4 or 5 years. Tell us more about that, because I know like CB Insights ranked them as number one out of 370 angel groups, number 5 overall in Investor Mosaic. This was an amazing place that you spent some time. Tell us that journey and what did you learn?
I was extremely fortunate, and probably 2 years into my tenure at the Scripps Research Institute, I realized academic science wasn't what I wanted to do for the rest of my life. And at the time, we're talking 2010 or so. So we're in the middle of that recession or starting to build out of that recession. And so there wasn't a lot of hiring going on at the large pharmaceutical companies. So I went to my principal investigator and I said, you know what? I'm not sure this is the life for me. I would like the opportunity to start exploring things outside of academic research. And I'll never forget, because my boss, Dwight Kono, said, you know what, Jack, that's fantastic. You've realized that this isn't for you. So what do you need from me? And I said, well, I would really kind of appreciate some flexibility. I'd like to maybe try some internships and some things like that. And he said, you're fantastic. Your time management is amazing. So, you take whatever time you need. And I know you'll work nights and weekends in order to get work done. And by the way, you're on a grant, so you're covered for the next 18 months with your salary. So let's stop all long-term experiments. So let's no longer start any more year or 18-month experience. Let's wrap up all of the long-term experience. Let's only focus on short and midterm experiments. And let's wrap up your grant. And so that at the end of the grant, you can be in a position, if you've identified a new opportunity, to seamlessly transition out of the lab. So I give Dwight all the credit in the world, because if he didn't give me that flexibility, if he just said, hey, well, you're here, I need you, at the bench 9 to 5, and I still need you, doing your stuff nights and weekends, I don't think I would have been able to do that. And so the first place I kind of landed was the Scripps Tech Transfer Office. And so they were doing like 6-month internships. And so I took one, and that kind of opened me up to the intersection of business and science. And that was really where I started to fit in. It allowed me to utilize my scientific skills, and it also allowed me to utilize some business knowledge and some things like that I found, very intriguing. And when that wrapped up, one of my friends was an unpaid analyst for Tech Coast Angels, and he was actually taking a full-time position with the Scripps Tech Transfer Office. And he said, hey, you want my unpaid analyst slot with Tech Coast Angels? And I said, sure. Went into the first couple of meetings, and I saw where there's this group of investors that are looking at early stage investment opportunities. And I just fell in love with it. I just consumed as much as I possibly could. I went to every possible meeting. I went to all of the due diligence meetings. I literally did everything. I provided notes to all of the members of what I was doing. And suddenly I looked up and, like, you know, 6 months in, I was actually leading a lot of the work. And I went to them and I said, you know what? You've got more deal flow than I can handle by myself. And I've got a ton of friends who are envious of what I'm getting. Will you allow me to build a life science analyst team? And so what we were doing, and the concept that Techos Angels had was, you know, they've got a lot of really smart investors with life science backgrounds, a lot of people that were, you know, execs at Pfizer and execs at Merck and things like that. But they had been away from the bench for so long, they just weren't familiar with what was cutting edge, and they were having trouble understanding the basic science of some of these, you know, new drug discovery and medical device and other platform technologies that were being brought to them. So they said, well, let's go out and let's get some really smart young kids and let's have them turn them loose and just have them do that due diligence. So I went to Techos Angels and I said, hey, can I run my own analyst team? And it was kind of funny. They're like, so let's get this straight. You want to recruit more people, you're going to train them, oversee them, and everyone's going to work for free. And I'm like, yeah. They're like, why didn't you bring this up 6 months ago? And I was like, I didn't know what I was allowed to do. I just showed up at a meeting one day and I didn't want to rock the boat. I just kept coming back every time you guys asked me. Ended up setting up a life science analyst team. They then came to me and said, hey, we've got another guy who's got similar experience to you, but on the high tech side, can you help him set up a high tech analyst team? We then ended up blending the high tech and the life science analyst teams together because it ends up the life science people wanted to work on the high tech deals and the high tech people wanted to work on the life science deals. Everyone wanted to kind of experience what they didn't have experience to. And I think over about a 3-year period, we trained about 60 analysts and we turned them back into the ecosystem. Some of them ended up entrepreneurs. Some of them ended up in operational roles at startups. Some of them ended up at other investor groups. I really like that model, because I thought it did a couple of things. One, it exposed people to the inner workings of what is normally kind of a black box, which is angel investing. Most people kind of see, well, I gave a pitch and then they said no. So this started exposing the ecosystem to actually people like, no, I've been on the inside. I know how it works, which I thought would create better deal flow and would create new opportunities and new touch points for people to kind of bring deals into Techos Angels. So
I love it, Jack. And you know what? First of all, your supervisor that said, hey, I'm glad you have figured this out. So a leadership lesson there, Jack, is for maybe even young people that are listening, it is okay to pivot. I usually just say, get started on the journey. And as you go along the journey, things are going to reveal themselves to you, you know, and that's what happened to you, you know, where you said, no, I don't think I want to do this academia research anymore. I want to try something else. How many people do we know that have done that, Jack? You know, you and I are a little bit further along and we know a lot of people that have done that, right? I love your supervisor. What a great attitude. And like you said, he really gave you that permission. Because he could have said, no, I'm sorry.
So crazy follow-up story along that line. And again, leadership podcast. One of the legendary first angel investors, and in fact, many people, you know, credit him with coining the term angel investor, who was a member of Techos Angels of the Orange County group. He tells a story when he was running one of his businesses. One of his best people, his like top marketing person, came to him and said, look, I enjoy working for you, but I've got this opportunity with this little startup in Seattle and I'm going to take it. I just want your blessing. I want to leave on good terms. And I want you to know this isn't anything that you did. This is just what's right for me in my growth path. And he said, you know what? That's fantastic. Certainly our business is going to struggle to replace you. It's probably going to take me 4 or 5 months to get that. But hey, I want what's best for you. Well, ends up that little startup was Amazon.
Oh my goodness.
And the guy came back to his boss and said, hey, you want to get in the seed round? Now, the follow-up of the story is the angel investor didn't pull the trigger on that. He used to have a rule where he would only invest in companies that he could fly to within 90 minutes because he enjoyed, you know, taking his founders out to lunch. Seattle from LA, Orange County, was a little bit more than 90-minute flight in his little plane. So he passed on that, but he had an opportunity because, you know, he let this employee go and they left on such great terms to be in the seed round of Amazon.
That's a great story, but I am sure that guy is still kicking himself for not going a little further than the 90 miles, right?
No, he's got this great TED Talk about smiling at failures. And that's one of his, is that, look, you know, you're going to win some investments and you're going to pass on some investments. And I just have to smile that I passed on an early opportunity in Amazon.
Oh, my goodness. Well, I love all of that, Jack. We've got so much more to talk about, but we do need to take a quick break and we'll be right back with Jack Scatese.
We at Technology Partners understand the difficulty to find work that is engaging, yields high pay, and facilitates a work-life balance. Over the past 25 years, we have enhanced the IT teams of over 244 client companies and placed more than 3,000 IT professionals with them on short-term or permanent basis. Our staff includes over 300 experienced IT professionals. So if you're looking to take the next step in your career, visit jobs.technologypartners.net, apply for a job, and one of our expert recruiters will be happy to connect with you.
So Jack, I know we've talked about this. I mean, you boomerang back 3.5 years ago to St. Louis. We're so glad you did because you spent over a decade in San Diego. Most people don't do that, Jack. Most people are like, San Diego, 75 degrees and sunny. It's gorgeous there. But, you know, there were things that drew you back to St. Louis. And I mean, St. Louis is a very special place. I didn't grow up here. I grew up in Kentucky, but we've been here for 37 years and we love St. Louis. What was it that drew you back to your roots?
First off, my move to San Diego was supposed to be temporary. We were talking about leaving for just a couple of years and that, you know, we would return. I like picked my head up and it had been 10 years, what felt like a blink of an eye. So the goal was never to leave St. Louis for that long. I found myself in a unique opportunity where I didn't have any commitments. And I essentially said to myself, if you don't pull the trigger on this opportunity, it may be another 10 years before the stars align and you wouldn't have to be walking away from a commitment. So moved back to St. Louis, opening day 2017. It was really fun driving across the Southwest, listening to different baseball games. But at a high level, the reason I moved back was this is where my family's from. I had an amazing network of friends and colleagues that I loved in San Diego, but you know, my family was in St. Louis. And number two, I just kept looking at what my life was going to be in Southern California, working in the startup scene where my, you know, rent was $2,000 a month for, you know, my small one bedroom apartment. And I just couldn't connect the dots between what I had in San Diego and where I wanted to be in my future. But every time I thought about the Midwest, affordable housing, good, stable jobs, I kept getting drawn back. So that's why I moved back. It was the future that I wanted that I now have. I'm now remarried. I've got one son, Luca. We have another son on the way in a couple of months. And this is the life I wanted. And I don't think I was going to be able to achieve that life in Southern California. So 70 degrees and fantastic weather. Sometimes you have to give up some things to get what you want.
Yeah. Missouri's very lucky to have you back, Jack. And I know you're making a huge impact. And that's what I want to get into now. Because at the time when you know, after you'd moved back, but we were looking a few years ago for a new director. And we hired you as our new executive director for the Missouri Technology Corporation. And I know you've just done amazing work since you've been here. So we're very, very lucky to have you. So glad you boomerang back. But, you know, before we go much further, I want to talk about MTC because a lot of our listeners may not really understand what is the Missouri Technology Corporation. You know, this is a public-private partnership. It was created by the Missouri General Assembly to promote entrepreneurship and the growth of new emerging high-tech companies. And this was done in 2005. So MTC has been around for a while. To date, MTC has invested in 135 different companies and created more than 320 commercial projects. And just in 2019-2020 alone, that fiscal year generated $277 million in revenues. But tell us more about MTC. And I know that you have said, you know, that early stage funding is so critical to businesses. We've had tremendous success. And so I'd love to get your perspective on all of that.
Yeah. So I guess maybe the first place to start is, you know, when I was in San Diego, my mom, who wanted me to move back right away, was always sending me articles about Cortex Innovation District and all of the things entrepreneurial that were going on in St. Louis, especially once I kind of got into the entrepreneurial scene at San Diego. And so I moved back not really knowing what was going on, but knowing that when I left in 2007, there wasn't a lot going on. And when I got back, I was absolutely surprised as to what was going on in St. Louis. And since then, I've been exposed to what's been going on in Kansas City and what's been going on in Springfield and Cape Girardeau and throughout the state. But a lot of what was going on in St. Louis was due to MTC providing early funding back in the 2010-2011 days. You look at like CET, well, that's an innovation center that was funded through MTC. When T-Rex was an innovation center, that was funded through MTC. A number of the large companies within the St. Louis and Kansas City areas that are creating a number of jobs throughout the region were funded with early risk capital from MTC. And then those companies are now creating entrepreneurs that are leaving to start their own companies, and MTC is providing funding. So it's interesting to see that in the decade that I left, a lot sprung up both in St. Louis and across the state, and that MTC was at the center of that. And then here I am, I find myself running MTC and looking to figure out what MTC and the state is going to do for the next 10 years. So early stage capital for companies is critical because it allows them to build out their products. And once their products are built out, you know, the market and the customers can support them. But the other flip of that coin is if you don't have the entrepreneurial services, if you don't have the infrastructure built, there aren't the resources for the entrepreneurs, and funding alone isn't enough. So that's why MTC kind of takes a two-pronged approach. We do direct investing on behalf of the state with state and federal capital, but then we also provide grants and funding to the state's 9 innovation centers to ensure that entrepreneurs have the resources that are required to grow their businesses within the state.
Yes, and I would encourage our listeners, Jack, if they have not visited one of the innovation centers, go and visit. I mean, it really is fascinating. You know, we've had what we call unicorns in the state of Missouri. And if you map it back, you know, Gainsight, I think MTC made the initial investment in 2012.
Yeah. So that was JBAR Software. I believe it was MTC and Cultivation Capital and Capital Innovators was in there as well. And that was Jim Eberling's second company. And then a private equity group came in, bought out most of the St. Louis investors, moved part of the company, I believe, to Seattle. But what most people don't realize, actually kept about a headquarter with about 30 to 40 people in St. Louis throughout the time. And so they then became Gainsight, and Gainsight was recently acquired for, I think it was $1.1 billion late last winter. On top of that, yeah, we've got Aclaris, which acquired Confluence Life Science a couple of years ago. And that was, I believe, a company that was created by BioGenerator, and MTC was an early investor with BioGenerator in that. And if you look at Aclaris, my understanding is, unfortunately for the company, all of their other drug candidates haven't panned out. And so the only one that they're kind of focused on at the moment, or the one they're mainly focused at the moment, is the one that they acquired from Confluence Life Science. And the company has over $1 billion market cap based solely on the value of what was developed in St. Louis. And then we've got Benson Hill. MTC was one of the first investors in that company with BioGenerator. And it was that money that convinced the CEO, Matt Crisp, to move from North Carolina, put the headquarters in St. Louis, put them in the Danforth Center, which then allowed us to kind of strengthen and unify some of those ag tech. And they just went public in September, and they've got a over $1 billion valuation as well.
And we've had similar stories for Kansas City. Payit is one, right, Jack?
Payit's a great one. GovTech, they're employing hundreds of people. They just did a $100 million private equity round maybe 18 months ago, which provided some of the early investors like us and the Casey Rising Fund to get some liquidity while we still hold a little bit of equity in the company moving forward. But yeah.
You guys partnered or hired Techonomy Global to help with this statewide strategic initiative. And you've already mentioned it, Jack, but what is it going to look like? What is the ecosystem in Missouri going to look like for the next 10 years? And that's one of the things that we're trying to do with Techonomy. I don't know if there's any of the insights or the ahas that have come out that you can just highlight very briefly before we move on to something extra.
Yeah. So, you know, at a high level, we brought in Techonomy Partners, and we've been initiating a statewide strategic initiative. And the concept behind it was the new MTC kind of took shape in the 2010-2011 era, you know, under Jason Hall's guidance. And we think we did a great job, but we're looking for someone to validate that, you know, we did a great job, and also, you know, kind of help us identify what the problems and gaps are moving forward, because they may not be the problems and gaps that we were trying to address in the 2011-2010 era. Hopefully that means we solved them, and hopefully that means we can identify the new ones and we can keep moving forward. So I don't have the full picture for what the next 10 years looks like. I can tell you that the economy has identified probably 8 different action items that they suggest MTC and the state of Missouri undertake. And some of those are interesting and we'll start digging through at them. But you know, the aha moment I think I'll put in is Kansas City. Unlike most border towns, it is an economic development 50-50 split right down the middle between Kansas and Missouri. According to Economy, most of the split border towns that they've looked at have been like 90-10, 80-20, and it's pretty easy for you to say, okay, well, we're going to put the majority of this in this state, and that's okay. But I think this is causing us to rethink how we look at Kansas City, and we can't necessarily look at it as Missouri versus Kansas. We have to actually look, especially through the entrepreneurial lens, as a region, and how do both states come together to drive the region together? And that when you actually look at the Kansas City entrepreneurial region, both Kansas and Missouri, it rivals St. Louis. But I think what we get a distorted picture when we just look at Kansas City, Missouri versus St. Louis, Missouri, and we're leaving almost 50% of the entrepreneurial activity off the table when we do that comparison, and that's not fair to Kansas City.
So for our listeners, keep your eye on this because there's going to be more, right, Jack? We're working monthly on this, so there'll be a lot of great insights and action items to come out of here. But, you know, all for the purpose, though, we want to win in the global economy. And, you know, we've already proven, I think, from highlighting these companies that are now employing hundreds of people and generating millions of dollars in revenue. I think we've already proven how important it is to make sure you've got a healthy entrepreneurial ecosystem. But I have to ask you, this is called something extra. Jack, what do you believe is the something extra that every leader needs?
So Lisa, I've got 3 written down. So the first is the ability to distinguish opportunity versus distraction. And actually, this is one of my favorite blog posts of all time. It was by Mark Schuster, who's a venture capitalist out of LA. The blog post is entitled, like, Great Leaders Avoid Shiny Objects. And I can't tell you the number of especially startups and founders that I've worked with where they're constantly bouncing to the next idea that they're so distracted that they're not able to capitalize on their core mission.
That is so good.
So then the second, and it kind of follows, they're closely aligned, is, you know, having intentionality when decision-making. The 2 best examples are Southwest's core mission is low fare pricing. And so every decision they make at the corporate level is, does this allow us to offer low fare pricing? And if it doesn't, it's not considered. And I find myself doing that with MTC a lot. We get a lot of people reaching out to us wanting us to be involved in projects. And I have to go back to, what is our mission? Our mission is to support high growth potential entrepreneurs within the state of Missouri. And if I'm offered a unique opportunity, it may be a great opportunity. It may be something that advances the state. But if it doesn't align with the core values of MTC, I really do have to pass. I can lend support, but it isn't something that MTC should be leading.
Right.
Then the third is, know who you are and what you're good at, and then set yourself up for success. And the caveat, though, is you have to allow yourself room to kind of grow and challenge yourself. But I see a lot of people who take positions or put themselves in a position that just doesn't align with who they are or what their core skill set is, and then they're surprised when they fail.
That is so good. I think you should write your own blog post there, Jack, because those all are so good. And we could just keep digging into those. But tell me real quickly, I mean, what are you most excited about right now? And how can our listeners, if there's a way they can get involved, what are you excited about, Jack?
I mean, I'm just excited about the opportunity for the state and promoting entrepreneurship. You know, once we get this strategic initiative, there's going to be a final report that's going to be published probably in late Q1, early Q2 2022. Once we get that out there, we're really going to be going through and trying to identify, you know, which of the tasks, which of the items we think we can launch. So I would say, you know, that's where we would, you know, really like the public support, especially those within the entrepreneurial ecosystem, is looking at that report, identifying which ones you agree with, which ones you think will address the biggest gaps, and then helping us advocate on the behalf of the state's entrepreneurial ecosystems to elected officials, to other organizations so that we can make sure we've got the funding and the ability to execute on them.
Well, Jack, this has been so much fun for me. Thank you so much for making time to be on the show today. And I cannot wait for our listeners to hear. I know they're going to be inspired, truly, because the best is yet to come, Jack. I really do believe that.
It is.
Well, thanks so much.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening to today's show. Something Extra with Lisa Nichols is a Technology Partners production. Copyright Technology Partners, Inc., 2019. For show notes or to reach Lisa, visit tpi.co/podcast. Don't forget to leave a review on Apple Podcasts, Google Play, or wherever you listen.